Well, my name is Neil Thompson, and we're going to look at mentoring. This is a session for those who would like to be mentored, and a session for those who are looking tips into how to mentor. And I've been I didn't volunteer for this talk. I've been asked to do this talk a number of times, and so this is kind of a repeat, but with things that I've learned along the way for all of us. Five years ago, a Denver seminary student got in touch with me and asked if I would mentor him. Well, I've done a lot of informal mentoring, which is mostly what this is about, but this was a formal mentoring program started by Denver Seminary. And it's actually very good, and it's very professional, it's well organized. I had to look at online videos of what I was supposed to do and how I was supposed to do it. It was all student-based, and I found out that every Denver Seminary student has to have 10 weeks of mentoring, one semester of mentoring. And so won't go into the details of what this young guy and I talked about. So it was all student-led. He prepared the agenda. We decided when to meet once a week for 10 weeks, and we keep in touch in between. And as we got to know each other and talked, I sensed needs in certain areas. And maybe it was more in marriage than anything else. And so this is what he wrote in his final report to the head of the mentoring department at the seminary. And this is what he wrote. The mentoring experience was the most transformative part of the semester overall. The mentor, me, provided incredible insights and asked probing questions. He was able to see areas of my life that I hadn't realized. He was able to help me in areas where I was wrestling, like, what does it look like to lead my wife? And so we had been talking a lot about the marriage relationship and ministry and that kind of thing. And he told me, his wife once told me, I really like it when you're on vacation. He was a very serious young man, so it was on vacation when he could relax and they could enjoy each other. He now leads an international leadership ministry, and they're doing very well. So that's probably one of the few times I've been a formal mentor. So how did this all start for me? Okay, so this is Denver Seminary in two seasons of the year. I have to remember to keep pushing this. I served with OMF at a mission hospital, Bonnaroo Christian Hospital in central Thailand, for 20 years. And if you're a missionary at one place for a long enough period of time, you're going to do things you never thought you'd be doing. And for me, that turned out to be leadership. When I went there, I wasn't interested in administration. I wasn't interested in leadership. I could care less. And eventually I got asked to be the hospital superintendent, and it was like they were kicking me out of the operating room into the boardroom. And it was, I had griped enough along the way and said, well, if I ever get to be the boss here, this is what I'm not going to do. And so I knew a lot of things I wasn't going to do. I hadn't really thought through what needed to be done, and now it was on my plate. But that's where leadership came into my life, and it was good, and it was difficult. But what I want to get to is one of the exercises during the leadership training. OMF had just started its leadership training course. We called it Project Timothy. This was the end of the 1990s. And so one of the things they had us do was get a big piece of white paper and across the top put the segments of your life, starting with 0 to 18 years, and then educational years, and then early work, and then growth, and right across the top. And then they said, think back, each section, who had the most influence in your life? And I was just fascinated by this. Stayed up late at night. The Ode to 18 was pretty easy, but the school years was pretty easy too. But there were a lot of people in my life that I really hadn't recognized. I hadn't recognized the impact that they had on my life. And I had kind of taken it for granted. So one of the things that I got out of this exercise was gratitude for those who were part of my life. There was the Sunday school teacher who went way beyond Sunday school. He wrote to me when I was at college. He sent me a magazine, a Christian magazine, to help with apologetics, to help me defend my faith in a secular college. And then he asked, do you want to go to a missions conference? Well, I wasn't interested in missions, but I like him, and he was going to ask some of my other friends to go. And so in the 1960s, I went to Urbana, the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship Triennial Missions Conference. And I still wasn't really interested in missions, but the speaker was John Stott. And he was one of the most influential evangelical people of the 20th century, along with Billy Graham and you name the third one. Blocking on it right now. Yes, thank you. Francis Schaeffer would be another one. So I went through each segment of my life and realized all that they had done. And it wasn't just Christians. My wrestling coach taught me lots about life besides what we learned on the mats. And a gruff surgical professor who was always tough and you were always doing the wrong thing. And yet he had a really soft heart and he wanted all of his surgical residents to get to the right place that God was leading them. Other great influences in my life during that time was in medical school, even in the 60s, there wasn't really an ethics component. How do you learn about what being made in the image of God looks like in medicine? And so in Philadelphia, where I trained, there was C. Everett Koop, I think one of the pioneers of pediatric surgery in the world, who later became Surgeon General, and he taught at our CMS group. It was CMS back then. And then another doctor who went on a short-term trip. And I look back on all these people and the influence that they had in helping to direct me, to guide me. They weren't telling me where to go, but they were God's influences in my life at that time that were so significant to me. So I'm getting, can't tell if I'm ahead or behind. Oh, yeah, Ralph Winter. So Ralph Winter wrote, it was just a clip. It wasn't even an editorial. It was just a box off to the side in this Journal of the Mission Frontiers. Brilliant article where he wrote that of all those called into missionary service, only 1 out of 10 make it. And I can think back to medical school. A lot of the Christian friends I had, they wanted to be missionaries. And I don't know that any of them made it to the mission field. And so what Ralph Winter was getting at is, where are the mentors? Where are the mobilizers? I've been a mobilizer for 20 years since returning from Thailand. When you mobilize someone to do something like to become a missionary, a medical missionary, what are you doing? You're discipling them. You're mentoring them. And we're going to get to the components of this in just a little bit. So if that's true, I don't know how he did his numbers, but if that's true, of all the people at this conference, 2,000, maybe only 20 are going to make it. Maybe only 20 are going to make it. What can we do about that? Those of us who desire to be mentors and those of us who desire to be mentored. And what do both of them look like? That's what we're going into today. So I want to think about our being on a journey. And I love this verse in Psalm 84:5. Blessed are those whose strength is in the Lord, whose hearts are set on pilgrimage. So we're going to be looking at the who, what, why, when, where. I'm not going to announce all those things, but the most important who, of course, is God himself, who created us, who made us. It's his world, and he would love to see everyone come to know his son, Jesus Christ, and that's something that we can have a role in. How do we follow through? How do we get there? So what is mentoring? You can Google it. You can look it up in books. There are all kinds of definitions. But I think one of the most important ones is a relational experience in which one person empowers or helps another by sharing God-given resources. That's what we're going to be looking at today. And I've used, as I was in touch with a lot of young people over the years, conferences like this, going to speak at churches, and then interacting with them, following up with them. We'll talk about some of what they wrote to me and where what their journeys look like, which might be similar to some of your journeys. So mentoring usually involves a transfer, empowering, providing, teaching and mentoring was not a great virtue in a lot of the areas of the world, in the world religions, because they get knowledge, it's power, they keep on to it. And yet Christians from the very beginning have been sharing what they know with other people, apprentices, mentorees, mentees, whatever you want to call them. So what does that look like? Skills, resources, experience. And that's what today is about, hopefully transferring these on to you, or for those of you who are already doing these things, perhaps giving you a few more arrows in your quiver. So as I got this feedback from young people, I made up the mnemonic icing, and we're going to look at the information. Several years ago, a pre-med student who was interested in healthcare missions asked me if there's a difference between MDs and DOs, doctors of osteopathy, and if a DO degree is accepted in other countries. So I gave her the information. They are equivalent, and they are accepted most of the places that I know around the world. So what did she need? She needed information. She needed to know that if she was already interested in a school of osteopathy, that she could go there and get a degree that would be accepted. So another medical student wrote, "First of all, would you please pray for me? I keep praying for discernment on choosing the right specialty. I think everyone, including my parents, advised me not to go into surgery. I just want to do what God wants, except I do not know what he wants me to do. Do you agree that having a family and being a surgeon together is impossible? I was also told that surgery is not a great field for international ministry because, and then all kinds of reasons." So here is someone who had been given a lot of misinformation or disinformation. Perhaps maybe even Christian parents wanted to see their daughter succeed in the States and not go away like my parents didn't want to see me go away. They proud that I was going to be a surgeon, and they wanted to brag about me at home. Took them a while. They learned how to brag about me halfway around the world, but it just took a lot longer. So she actually eventually went into internal medicine, and I don't know if she's gone overseas or not. So secondly, communication. Need to set aside the time, like this Denver Seminary student and I did. Set aside time to be together, a regular time, usually over lunch, at the cafeteria at the seminary. And it's not a job. Mentoring, being mentored, is really building a relationship, and in the end, you're learning from each other. You're learning from each other. One pre-med student wrote, "What else am I forgetting in this process? It seems like there is a lot to think about and decide. From your experience, what are some things that would be helpful to remember during this time about the Lord and about his calling in general?" And I sensed that this med student was, a pre-med student, was discouraged. And so I tried to encourage her, gave her some inspiring, gave her some good books to read. And sometimes people just need a pat on the back or a verse. And in my experience, and probably in yours, as you look over 12 years of training, probably, to become a doctor specialist, you're going to meet different people in different places, either through CMDA or from church. And different people have different things to offer. So what this person needed was encouragement. Mentoring isn't just passing on information. It's building a relationship and getting to know each other. And sometimes discovering that what someone you're mentoring wants is not what they need. Perhaps what was the case with a student that I spent time with at Denver Seminary. Beyond encouragement for the journey, sometimes is providing inspiration. And I felt that I could do that by recommending books like Dr. Ida, the story of Ida Scudder, who went to South India about 100 years ago, over 100 years ago, mainly to minister to women, to girls, who were both castaways, not a priority in the Hindi culture of the Hindu culture of that day. And so she not only went back and spent time in villages empowering women and children, she ended up building, starting Vellore Christian Medical College, one of the premier medical colleges in all of India right now. So Dr. Ida, very inspiring. And then the books by Dr. Tom Hale. He was a surgeon, his wife was a pediatrician, they worked in Nepal, and at one point of his life he stopped doing surgery and started writing books. And they're very inspirational, very, very helpful. So, inspiration. Down to networking. This might mean connecting a mentee with resources. Like almost all the young people I talked to, I said, are you a member of a local CMDA chapter? And encourage them to do that. Have you been to GMHC and explain what this conference is all about? And so you're networking for them. You're opening doors, building bridges for them to cross where they can be with like-minded people who share the vision of what they see themselves doing in the future, which is being a medical professional serving in missions somewhere around the world. Another pre-med student asked, what are the most important components I should consider in a medical school? Christian fellowship, cost, the financial aspect, location, match rate, program, name. What did she need? Guidance. And so that's what I was able to provide for her. So icing, information community. This is the first of three prisms we're going to look at to try to provide some inspiration, some information, some encouragement to you as you move along. Oh, I was supposed to be moving this all along. Okay. Now I get it. Okay, think of some of the mentors in the Bible. They're not called mentors, but we're looking at their lives and what they did, not a definition from a dictionary. So we look at Barnabas. I'm not sure that he considered himself mentoring Paul. I think he did what needed to be done to a new Christian, a young Christian, who was not liked among his peers for very good reasons, because he had been killing their friends, taking them to jail. And so Barnabas took Paul, and he found him. He went to Tarsus once to find him and bring him back. And he enabled Paul to be the person that God led him to be in Acts. And then Paul, talented, smart, visionary. I used to think he was just smart and visionary, and I didn't see the relational, the personal aspect of Paul until later on in my life. And if you want to find out what a people person Paul was, read Romans 16, where he's addending his letter to the church at Rome and talking about all these 30-some people whom he had worked with over the past who were now in Rome working. And so there's Paul, fantastic mentor, who mentored Timothy, timid, quiet, and reserved. But then later on, as Paul encouraged him, gave him the information he needed, challenged him, inspired him, he ministered effectively in Ephesus, Corinth, and Philippi. And then Titus, probably more of an extrovert, was ready for ministry and was ready to do whatever Paul said. So what needs to be mentored? I wasn't supposed to put that up there. They're all the answers. So what do you think needs to be mentored in your life? Let me know. That list was half as big until a talk a couple years ago, and you guys gave me all the rest of the answers. What in your life right now, give me real live answers, do you want to have mentored? Nothing? But you're here. Yes. We're going to school, to medical school?
Nursing.
Okay, where to go, what to do, whether to go to nurse, full nursing or nurse practitioner. Yeah, great. Who else? Yeah.
Honestly, like how to meet people or organizations I'm supposed to get plugged into to like actually go.
Good. How to find a mission agency. Yeah, very good. Yes.
Yeah. Being mentored in a young Christian marriage.
Okay. Marriage, family. You guys are hitting all the hot spots. Yes.
How to translate my education into the mission field, like my healthcare education.
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking maybe of cultural aspects. How do you?
More that my healthcare field is already a niche in the U.S. and I don't know how compatible it is overseas. Where it's compatible, is it even a field in other countries? Like, so.
Well, good. You're asking the right questions because you want to be sensitive and you want to be appropriate when you get there to offer what you have to make sure that that's what they need and want. Yeah, good. Very good. Yes.
I would say like encouragement of continuing to grow in my relationship with Christ through residency.
Oh, Christians need encouragement through residency, don't they? Yeah, that's great. Yeah, my advice. Oh, I'm not supposed to be giving advice yet. Yeah. Don't buy into a group practice too soon. Just keep yourself, yes.
Just Sarah. Thinking about each job, the school, everything else, how is this preparing me for missions and not getting all wrapped up in the education and everything and then finding out I went down the wrong path kind of thing.
Yeah.
Connected all along.
Yeah, that's kind of a good global comment to what we're talking about. Yes?
Yes, as a pre-med student, how to find some kind of discipleship or mentorship involving missions.
That's excellent, yeah.
Role models in my field, like people who feel like a great Christian that I can model my life after.
Role models. That we can pattern our lives after. Yep.
Encourage them not to go into debt as much as possible.
Yeah, that's part of my comment about not putting yourself into a group practice, medicine or nursing or whatever, because you incur a lot of debt because they know you can make a lot of money. That's a good financial piece of advice. these are the answers. Some have asked, well, how do I grow as a Christian? Because that's, I mean, the spiritual component is really the one of the most foundational. Humanitarian work is great, but we're not talking about humanitarian work. We're talking about having ministry to the body. The body is very important, but we're not just bodies, and we're not just spirits. We want to have a holistic approach, an integrated approach to the ministry that we're going to be doing. So we need to grow spiritually. Personal growth and maturity. Yeah. In our mission agency, OMF, we have, some people have said OMF stands for 1 million forms, and that's what it looks like going in. Everyone has a purpose, but let's spend a lot of time doing that. Other agencies might be similar. But one of the things we do is a lot of personality tests, the DISC, D-I-S-C, and the Myers-Briggs. And some people think, why are we doing all this? And, you know, this isn't navel-gazing. It's not just to find out who we are and our inner self and find ourselves in there. It's really to find out how God made us. And one of the major purposes of taking these personality tests is, who are we? How do we fit into teams? Because hardly anything that's done on the mission field is done alone by one person or even one couple. It's usually done in teams. And that's so how do we recognize strengths and weaknesses? How do we work with people who are difficult to work with? How do people out there work with this difficult person to work with? And so that's a lot of what building teams is about. So physical, we want to be healthy. We want to eat the right foods, exercise, do all the things that our mothers taught us to do when we were growing up. Spiritual, I think some of the basics. Making good friends, making good choices, how we use our time, spending time in God's Word with God's people, fellowshipping, worshiping. We're talking about the basics of growing up in God. Professionally, questions about, where to go. Some people haven't even decided on doctor, nurse, other paramedical professions. And so these are areas. Communication. This is a little bit different from the communication that we just went through before. This is learning how to communicate. When I came back after 4 years in Thailand, I had been in Buddhist Thailand, tropical Thailand for 4 years. And you go back to your family and they ask you how it was and you describe something and they say, good. And they go back and watch the baseball game. Pick up the newspaper. And it's something that needs to be learned. How do you communicate what you've experienced like on another planet? Back to your family, back to your friends, and when you get an opportunity to speak. So that's the kind of communication we're talking about here. Leadership. There'll be lots of resources listed when I get this up on the website of leadership, which is part of being a good mentor. You want world culture and worldview. There was a panel yesterday on Hindu, Buddhist, and Islamic, Muslim worldviews. So it's important to know the people where you are going to be working, where you're going to be serving. And usually mission agencies will help you adapt, help introduce you to these things. And then to sharpen your vision. Going back to Ralph Winter, I think a lot of people who had this vision of serving when they were young, they just get so busy. They just get so busy that the vision sort of fades. And a mentor can be one who can keep the vision sharp for what you wanted to do in the first place when you were younger. So another way to look at this, we don't have a whiteboard, so we're not going to go through that. I'll do some air drawing up here. What are some obstacles that you see to serving in medical missions? So this is the third lens or prism that we're looking through to try to find out, how do we get what we need? How do we provide what somebody else needs? So are some of your obstacles? Yes?
Aging family members.
Aging family members. Do I go? Do I stay? What's God calling me to do? And then even for those who have gone, some come back to take care of aging family members. Yeah, thank you.
I think it's been mentioned before that finances, and there could be debt that you incur that you need to pay for, or being able to live on the field and be financially supported.
Finances. Someone has already said not going into debt. One friend of mine who also worked in Thailand said a friend of theirs gave them, I'm not sure what the right word for gave, a house that they paid the mortgage on until it was paid off for them to live in when they came home. And they had paid off the mortgage, and then they had this, and that became their little nest egg. That was an investment for the future. And one friend of one missionary family helped to finance them and to provide, and thinking about the future as well. Yes, very good. Finances. What else? Yes?
Language.
Language. Yeah. An introduction to learning a new language. Yeah.
Sometimes expectation. They think they're going to go and really do a lot in their field, and it's kind of real basic things, or it's way out of their field.
Yeah, we were just talking at a young lady at our booth who wants to be a CRNA, certified registered nurse anesthetist. And we're saying, she wants to know where she can go. And I said, and she won't be ready for 4 years. I said, I have no idea. And that's where a step of faith needs to be taken. Many of our medical people went to East Asia not knowing when they left the States what they would be doing when they got there. And there's some amazing stories of how God merged what a missionary had to, what a missionary doc had to offer and what was needed in China. Oh, shouldn't have said that. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you. Other?
Getting sick at the phase where you're serving.
Yeah. If you're serving at a hospital, there's a place. But sometimes it goes beyond that. Yeah. Thank you. Yes?
I think it's Rob. Summarizes what you said before, but it's you need faith. And what I mean by that is if God's calling you and he's asked you to do something, you may not know or have any idea what you're going to do when you get there, but you have to have faith that the Holy Spirit's going to lead you. And when you get there, you still may not know, but you still have to have the faith. And I know in my experience being overseas, we had no clue what we were doing. Because it was, and it changed when we got there what we thought we would do. But it was beautiful on how God worked that out. And fruitful in how he planted it. But it just took, I can't get frustrated here, I just have to trust.
Right. And we're talking about how do we be as responsible as we can be, as we can be in preparing for the unknown. And then there's the element of faith, knowing that we can't prepare everything for the unknown, and that's, you know, and so we look to God. So these are some answers that people in the past have given. How to find God's will, and that's what I was asking when I was young, and that's what you're asking, and a lot of the things we've already gone over is how we find God's will. Spend time in the Word, worship at a good church, and the like. Family resistance. A lot of young people say, what if my parents don't want me to go? Especially Asian Americans. Their parents sacrificed everything for them. Some of them came from China, and their kids want to go back to China. Said, what are you trying to do? And so an editorial staff of Asian Americans wrote a book called How to Follow Jesus Without Dishonoring My Parents. It's an excellent book for non-Asian Americans as well. And I think that's in my list later on. So family issues, some of these have been brought up. Finances, Bible training. Some mission agencies require Bible training. Today, many mission agencies are asking, were you responsible in small groups, leading Bible studies? How conversant are you with the Bible? Because first of all, we need to know the Bible. Second of all, we need to be able to know when there's, I'm missing a word here. Help me. When there's bad teaching, when there's heresy, how can we sense that? Where do we go in the Bible to find out, oh, this is what the Bible teaches. This is the foundation. So we need to know the foundation. Cross-cultural training, and that's where the mission agency begins to come in. Finding an agency, John McVeigh had a session on that yesterday, I think. So these are all things that you can ask people. Fear. My wife, Wani, is Thai, and we went to a small group in Singapore about 6-7 years ago, and we were taught. A lot of them had been on all of them had been on short-term trips, and they're still wondering, how is God leading? What's God's will for my life? And one girl said, I don't want to go. I'm afraid. It was really fear. And she said, I know I should go. I don't want to go. And eventually she, we talked it through. What are the fear factors? What's going on in your life? And she said, yeah, I really do want to follow God's will. And she made it to the mission field. I was able to identify her fears and then to work through that. And I think that's very important. Oh, how'd that happen? Okay. So my favorite books that I recommend, and I've got a bibliography for mentoring, and then I've got a brief bibliography of medical missionary biographies, autobiographies, and about missions and medical missions. So I mentioned this couple before. Tom was a surgeon, Cynthia a pediatrician, and that's a picture of their family a long time ago. On being a missionary, oh, that's coming up. I'll save that. But the quote's here. Okay. On being a missionary, Tom Hale says, medical missions, whether domestic or foreign, is the most useful, fulfilling, and challenging career open to any Christian health professional. Don't forget that. And this is the book that he wrote. It's dated in one sense, but it's not dated in the other. It's still up to date. Here's the book I mentioned earlier about Dr. Ida. Fascinating. And actually, Indira Gandhi visited her because of the fame that she had in starting this amazing hospital in South India. And then when Paul Brand became a missionary, he worked at Vellore, and then he worked at a substation in Vellore called Karagiri, and that's where he learned about leprosy. And that's where he actually did some of the research delineating the nature of the deformities in leprosy, and then devised a tendon transfer for claw hand. So this is the book. This is one of the major books that influenced me, inspired me to become a medical missionary, thinking I'd be going in and doing leprosy work and ended up not doing it because there were other people who were doing it when I got there and they needed a general surgeon. So this is what John McVeigh put together years ago. There's a website by the same name. You've got questions that you've asked here. You can put questions into the website, and he's quoted many people that are conversant in the kinds of questions that people are asking. Two years ago, Mike Chupp gave his lecture on mentoring. He's the CEO of CMDA, and so I sat in on his talk, and it was very good. It was different. He had much better pictures than I do, but it was very good. And when I went on the medicalmissions.com website and then went to resources and then I searched mentoring, his talk came up. And if you pull that up, he gave resources with live links to the mentoring manual for his mission agency.
World Gospel Mission,
thank you, for CMDA mentoring material and for Denver Seminary, which I had sent to him when I told him about my experience there. And you'll find tremendous live links. And this is all in the bibliography that's part of this talk as well. So we've gone over a lot of the basics. And we go back to Ralph Winter. And the challenge is, what if more of us become mentors? What if those who have the vision when they're younger to become a medical missionary, healthcare missionary somewhere in the world, they can follow through on their on their initial vision? Someone asked, how do you find role models? And I don't think the role models are going to go and tap you on the shoulder. They might. But that's some of what you want to be looking for. You want to be looking for people. And so I would say, I would repeat what I said before, get involved with local CMDA chapters. You're more likely to find one there than anywhere else. Or people in your church who might have been missionaries. You want to think of the question, what needs to be mentored? What do I need mentored at this time? Is it spiritual growth? Is it where to find a good residency? And there are different people who can answer these different questions and different needs at your of your life at different times. And so I think mentoring is often presented as a top-down, this person will do all this for you for your whole life. That's probably not going to happen. But that we ourselves are looking for the needs we have at this time to be faithful to how God has called us. So, okay, here's the whole bunch of this in the talk, and then medical missionary bibliography. So, any questions?
Maybe a comment before when you were asking. I was thinking that medical missionaries sometimes all wrapped up about medical. Get there and they're not connected to a Christian, or you know, them you know, either evangelizing or you know, praying with, if they don't have a spiritual connection with what they're doing, you know, they may be part of a mission organization, they just feel like they're practicing medicine, they can do that at home. I've always encouraged people to do 1 year of seminary if you're going to be a career missionary. And they'll say, oh no, I have too much education, I don't have time, but it made a huge difference for me.
So two comments. What do you go, what if you go to a place where there really isn't an evangelistic or church planning emphasis and you feel like you're doing over there, wherever, what you could have done here? And then secondly, he did a year of seminary and recommends it for everybody. I did 1 year of seminary between internship and residency, and that was an amazing time. Built friendships of people who are still friends and still support us financially and pray for us. So yeah, two good comments. Thank you. Yes, sir.
In the world that we live in, you can get asked to leave a country, get kicked out. They have to leave for security reasons. Do you have anything to say about having a plan B?
Are you more concerned about answering the question about how to avoid getting kicked out because of security reasons, or more talking about the plan B?
Sometimes, I mean, the government will assist you to leave.
Yeah.
So, what would you do then?
Well, I think that's very difficult. If you're part of a mission agency, the mission would know of other opportunities where you can serve. If it involves another country, another language, another culture, that gets really dicey. Am I going to be able to spend the time? Do I have the energy to do that? Some people, when they've been kicked out, come back home and mobilize for the home agency using their experience to challenge and inspire younger people like I did when OMF asked me to come home. So there'd be two options. Find another place to serve in the same country if it's available. Go to another country if that's possible. They're the two options that come to me right now. Yes?
Well, we live in a new world of telemedicine. And we just got kicked out of Pakistan this summer, so I'm going to telemedicine.
Yeah. There are two guys walking around the booths the last 2 days who are specifically doing telemedicine as a career, and it's called Something Bridge. And so there are people who are looking for the front end, who can be the specialists in this country and other countries, who can answer questions and be the resource on this end, and then they're looking for people on the serving side who can do that. Yeah, so that might be something that you could get involved in. Do you have an answer to your own question?
About? Well, I've been kicked out twice, so I didn't do either of those things.
Yeah. We had a Korean gastroenterologist working in China who was a little bit too eager to tell the wrong people about Jesus, perhaps. I'm not sure how to say that. And then he eventually found a professorship in Vietnam. So he's probably on his fifth or sixth language there. People do that. Yes, sir?
I'm just wondering how missionary committees within churches could be better equipped.
Everybody hear the question? How can we educate mission committees and churches better? I'd say do your best. My wife is the active missionary now. I'm the retired part of the plan. I would always rather spend time with a missions committee of a church that supported us than actually preach. I wanted one-on-one time with them to be able to answer their questions, be able to help them. I think one step further than that is to try to tell them about the strategic importance of the healthcare side of things. They get medicine, it's fancy, it gets people's attention, but you want them to see how it fits in. Many churches have let go of their missions conferences. I would challenge them to continue missions conferences in one way or another, whether it's to give the pulpit or the missions committee time with the missionary when they come through. But in whatever way, for every church to keep missions not in a segregated department of the church, but to have it part of the DNA of the whole church, and challenge the missions committee to try to do that. So that in the children's program, in the adult program, that missions be part of all of that. And probably if it's not really a main priority of the senior pastor, it may not happen. So work on your senior pastor. Yeah, thank you. Good question. I haven't had that one before.
Can I make a comment on that?
Please.
So Midwest Care Connection exists to help churches refine their, it says, the aim of MC2 is to inform, inspire, and educate the church, mission coordinators, and mission committee members. So it's under MC2.global or Midwest Care Connection, but it's connection, CONNEX, MC2 Church or Missions.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Other questions? How many of you want to be mentors? Great. Probably already are, but anyway. How many of you want our mentees looking for mentors? Great. And some of the same hands went up, and that's the way it should be, because those of us who are being mentored can. There's always something we can provide for someone a little bit younger, a little bit less experienced. Yes, Rob.
I was going to ask a question because I think this is. I'm a dentist.
So I have to be very careful with him. He's one G. He's part of GMHC. He's the monitor here. Everybody hear that? I'll take it one further. It's more difficult than that. What if you've got a family and kids?
Right.
How do you work that in?
We've got a lot to balance.
Yeah, we've got a lot to balance. And have to be intentional. We've had that. That question comes to us when we're at our booth talking to young people coming through. The best way I can describe it is, I don't know if like a dance is the right way to do it, but maybe hourglasses or balloons. But so you think, okay, you got three major commitments, commitment to God and the ministry, commitment to family, and sorry, I'm having a senior moment.
God and family.
God and family and work. And I told my wife my priority was family, work, and God. And she said to me, you've got it the other way around. How come it's always work, God, and family? Where she always felt it at the end. So I've described it as kind of a dance where it's 33 1/3% for each. But at any one time, it may be 100% or 95% family and a little bit of work and time to spend time with God. And there might be time when you're on a retreat, and so most of that is God and family with no work. And so you're flowing through life with different percentages at different time in terms of what you prioritize. You're not prioritizing everything all the time at 100%. We can't do that. And so this is what occurred to me in looking back on my life. And my wife still tells me the same thing. So I'm trying.
Can I add something?
Sure.
This was, to me, surprising, but I spoke at Johnson Bible College one time for their mission department, or the mission class, 150 students. And half of them said they wanted to go on the mission field. And so my question was, in this room, how many of you have discipled two or three people in your life? And there was maybe three hands to the ring. And I'll say this to the young people here. If you need to be able to be discipling people here before you're going to be able to disciple people overseas, because it's 10 times harder there. So do the work of God here. That's your training. Like your training for med school and dental school and being a nurse. Because God's called you for that. And then you're going to be able to go and really, you're going to be able to do the things that God's called you to do.
Thank you, Rob. I think that's
surprising for me.
Yeah. If you're thinking of going, start doing now what you're going to be, at least a portion of what you're planning on doing there. Thank you. That's very good. Yes, back row. You mean like the Bible?
Yeah.
seems to get lost, I guess, in everything else we're reading and doing and time-wise. And I don't know if there's any, like, podcasts or video lecture series or anything like that that could really bundle things down and hone in on the key points.
I don't have any podcasts at the tip of my finger in that area. I listen to podcasts in a different area right now. I think residency is a period of time when you may not be able to do all that you'd like to do in the rest of the years of your life. And I think maintaining a private quiet time is extremely important. I think I moved mine from early morning to the end of the day during my residency. I might have done some in the morning. But I did shift things around. I was able to go to church maybe twice a month. But I found a small group, mostly non-medical, in the new church that I got into, and I felt that that was important. And I could make that maybe 3 out of 4 weeks. So I think you need to be very creative in your residency years. If someone has a podcast on spiritual formation or your name?
I'm Lizzie.
Lizzie, yeah. So anything for her, please provide that. That's good. But that's a great question. Residency is a particularly difficult time for this. Yes?
Yeah, after 40 years speaking at mission conferences, you know, the first part is always thank you for the money to keep us going. The rest of the time seems to be this is what we've done with your money. Not that callous, but, you know, essentially, I don't know if we do enough recruiting and challenging people, you know, when we're back on furlough or wherever it is.
Okay. He's talking about the relationship between a missionary and the church, and basically, are we challenging the church and the people enough? I mean, we were always looking for new workers, so we tried to make a challenge a part of every talk that we gave. But that's good for anyone who is a missionary who's coming home. Tell them where you work, what you do, and the needs you have. And one of the things that I like to tell supporting people in supporting churches was, I can't think of any area of work that you couldn't adapt in some way to the mission field. One of our members from Texas is a soccer coach in Thailand, discipling kids on the soccer field. So sports missions is a good part of what can be done in certain parts of the mission field. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
I guess as a pre-med student, I feel like I really want to get out there and get involved, but also I don't exactly have skills or anything. Like, I can't be performing surgeries and stuff. So I guess what would exactly be the balance between, like, trying to serve now versus just focusing on my education so I could serve later?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and I think everyone should be thinking about this. We tell people if they want to go on the mission field and they're in training, they want to do something, be involved, suture, use your hands, or diagnose. Wait until you're in your end of your residency when you're a little farther along. But there's nothing wrong, even as a pre-med student, to take a vision trip to a part of the world you may be interested in and see if God might be talking to your heart, speaking to you at that time, that this might be a part of the world. You won't be able to do anything except if you speak the language to be part of the team and share and sing. But you can be asking God, is this where you might be leading me? That's what happened to me in Thailand. Went to Thailand as a medical student and said, oh my goodness, I've been wondering what God was going to do with my life for years, and now all of a sudden, when it happens, it can be very sudden, and it might be in your pre-med years. So I think there's a role for early on and for later on in your training.
It's more on the medical piece than just the doctor part. When my daughter was 12 years old, she ran the pharmacy one place. She used to give me, you know, 12 green pills and 12, you know, white pills. But then we had medical students in pre-med, and they were involved. They saw everything going on.
John's partly answering your question. There's more in a medical short-term team than just the doc and the nurse. I think the ratio is usually 3-1 non-medical to medical, because they can be, his 12-year-old daughter was working the pharmacy and color-coding meds and things of that sort. So, yeah, very, very good point. Well, we've come to our conclusion. Thank you very much, and God bless you as you mentor and be mentored along the way. Thank you.